Welcome to the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Kara, the podcast for Central Floridians who want to be in the know on what's happening in Orange, Lake, Osceola, and Seminole counties. Sponsored by the Central Florida Home Brewers, the premier craft and homebrew club. Learn to brew beer, kombucha, mead, or make wine. Visit www.cfhb.org. Now, here's your host, Mike Kara.
Well, welcome back to our next edition of the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Kara here at Dead Lizard Brewing in beautiful Orlando, Florida, as we are here for the Central Florida Homebrewers General Membership Meeting. And with me today is a member of the Central Florida Homebrewers, Mr. Dave Snow. And Dave, it's a pleasure and honor that you could join me today. And once again, talk all about beer and homebrewing and craft beer. And you brought, to share, luckily you're able to do that, a great beer. And why don't you tell our audience a little bit about what you brought?
Well, thanks, Mike. This was a beer that we entered in a competition down in Odessa, Florida. It was sponsored by a brewery down there called Liquid Garage. It was called Iron Homebrewer, and the idea behind this competition was that you enter the competition and they assign you some random ingredient that you have to figure out a way to use in your beer. And we got popcorn. So this beer happens to be, we decided on a Goza style, because typically a Goza already has a little bit of a salty flavor to it, like popcorn would. So we decided on that, and we brewed this popcorn beer. We used about 2 pounds of popcorn. We popped it, with an air popper, and added it to the mash of our beer, and added a little bit of lactic acid to it to give it just a touch of sourness to it. And entered into competition, and we took it down, and it was kind of a people's choice sort of a thing. We served it at a festival, and the judges picked their top five beers, and then it was a people's choice on who won. Unfortunately, we didn't win, but everybody seemed to enjoy the beer.
Now, Dave, the question I have with these contests, they mentioned that, you have to pick these ingredients. Now, they assign you ingredients that they've tested. I mean, they're not just going to give you, like, gravy or hamburger. These are actual?
No, that's the idea. It's actually, they do give you these weird ingredients. People had things like barbecue sauce. Our other member, Matt, and his wife, Christy, drew Malamars, which is kind of like a moon pie.
Yeah.
Our other member, Bob, got sage. There was all kinds of weird ingredients that people... One of the ingredients was anything from IKEA.
Oh, no.
Well, they picked Himalayan sea salt with these particular people, because you can buy it at IKEA. So, it's kind of a fun thing. It's not, these beers aren't true to style or anything. It's just to take some kind of random weird ingredient and see if you can make a beer that tastes good with it.
So, Dave, with this beer now, since you've made it, I mean, it's great. I mean, is that something that you would, for me, it turned out great. I mean, is that something that you would serve at one of your parties? Or?
Well, if we were to do it again, it'd probably be pretty hard to replicate it because of all we went through.
Yeah,
we were kind of winging it as we went. I'd be happy to serve some of this at a party. Unfortunately, it's almost all gone. Because we served most of it at the festival. But yeah, it was a fun thing to do. We'll do it again next year.
Oh, so you really don't write down the ingredients or what you're doing? Like, okay, I'm putting this much of that? Or?
Well, we did at the beginning. When we found out that when we added the popcorn and everything, it didn't really quite give us the popcorn flavor that we were looking for. So we ended up making like a tea out of popcorn, popping some the popcorn kernels themselves and making like a tea. And then we were just trying to add it to taste. So we did keep track. We could probably come close if we tried to do it again. But who knows? Next year they'll give us some other weird ingredient to use. So.
Now, Dave, as you know, we've mentioned before that, you know, inside your house you have a, you know, very nice bar, and you brew your own beer, and sure, and you serve, you know, this beer, you know, if you have, you know, I guess two parties a year. And so, I mean, for you, is there a certain process of picking the beer, or is it a lot of times you might, oh, it's a St. Patrick's Day party, I still have some of this red ale left, maybe I should serve that?
Well, that's exactly what I've been doing, because we have our St. Patrick's Day party coming up here in just a couple of weeks. So I brewed an Irish red ale, and I also brewed a dry stout that I'll be putting on the nitro tap. Excuse me. So it'll be similar to a Guinness. So, yeah, I do try to plan ahead for our parties. Like for St. Patrick's Day, obviously, Irish-style beers, Irish red, stout, something along those lines. And then we do another party in October at our house for Oktoberfest. So we'll do an Oktoberfest beer, maybe a Schwarz beer, maybe, you know, other German-type styles. So I do try to plan ahead as much as I can for those.
And now, Dave, I know we have a lot of different brewers listening to this and might have some newbies. And when you mention nitro, can you give us a refresher course on what that means?
Sure, sure. Nitro is typically how you would see a Guinness poured if you're in your local pub or whatever. And it's pushed with a combination of nitrogen and CO2, typically 70% nitrogen, 30% CO2. And the nitrogen isn't as soluble into a beer as CO2 is, which is the way normal beer is carbonated with CO2. So what you do is you push that beer through a special faucet that has little tiny holes in it that brings the nitrogen out of solution and creates these tiny bubbles, and you get that cascading effect that you see when you get your Guinness pour at a good pub. And it gives it a very much smoother mouthfeel to the beer. It does involve a little more equipment, special gas that you have to have and everything, rather than just CO2. And operates at a little more pressure. But once you get a system like that dialed in, it's a very, very entertaining pint of beer to pour.
So, Dave, I'm not sure, if you're like me, I like to drink the food before I eat. But, I mean, for people that do like to drink beer and eat, and occasionally I'll do that, do you are concerned with, you know, flavor profiles and food and beer pairings? Or?
Well, we not necessarily food and beer pairings. We do just typical traditional type food for St. Patrick's Day, for instance. We'll have an Irish stew that Diane and I will be making, and some corned beef and cabbage. Not sure how well that really pairs with a beer, but but we do the same thing on Oktoberfest. We will do you know, bratwursts and things like that, and sauerkraut and things.
And speaking of Oktoberfest, Dave, I mean, if you had a chance, I don't know if you have a chance to go over to Germany, but I mean, if you had a chance to go to some of these other beer festivals and get ideas or...
Yeah, actually, when I was in the military back in the mid-80s, I spent a year in Belgium.
Oh.
And that's where I really started to learn what good craft beer, especially obviously Belgian beers, were all about. So that was a big, huge influence on my, at the time, I didn't know I'd be homebrewing, you know, number of years from then, but it was a huge influence on my love for craft beer.
And one of the things I mentioned, Dave, before we got on the air that I wanted to talk about was, you know, are you still looking for ideas? I mean, as a homebrewer, do you say, I have discovered the secret of everything? Or you're still saying, wow, this is a neat idea. Maybe I could learn something new.
Absolutely. I still love to try new things. I still brew my traditional recipes that I have. But I always like to try something new. And a good example of that, I just brewed a Schwarz beer that I did fermenting the beer under pressure, which I've never tried before. Where you put the beer in a fermenter when it's ready to ferment and put about 15 PSI on the beer, and you can ferment it at warmer temperatures. It ferments out a little quicker, and it also cuts down on any kind of fruity type esters that you might get in a lager if you're not careful with your temperature control. So I'd been reading about it, fermenting under pressure, and I thought, I'll give it a try. So I did, and the beer is just about ready to drink. Another few weeks of lagering, and we'll see how it turns out. But I always do like trying new things like that.
And now, speaking of not necessarily old things, but I mean, I don't want to say that, you know, you want to make a clone of a Guinness, but I mean, is there a situation where you're having a party, people really like Guinness, and you might make it more Guinness-esque?
Well, it's funny you say that, because the Irish stout that I just brewed that I will be serving at our Oktoberfest party is, it's not a clone recipe, but it's a recipe that is supposed to be fairly close to a Guinness, and using some different techniques with the dark and roasted malts to try to add color as opposed to a lot of flavor to it. So, yeah, I mean, I did exactly what you said. I'm trying to, and I've done a lot of other clone-style beers. There was a, I used to listen to a podcast called The Brewing Network, and they did a show called Can You Brew It? And they give you the recipe. They actually would interview a commercial brewer, and they would try to get the recipe out of them. And then they would brew this beer and see if they could come close to the actual commercial-style beer. So I did a few of those. I did, as an example, Lagunitas IPA, which most of us have had over the years. And I brewed a version of it, and it was spot on. It was very close to the commercial version. So doing clone beers is a lot of fun, actually, because you try to, you know, your goal is to come as close as you can to the commercial version. So, yeah, that's a lot of fun doing those.
Okay, Dave, and finally, so when you first started brewing compared to now, is there anything different? Is there more technology? Is there more equipment? Or how has it changed for you personally?
Well, yes to all that. I mean, yes, the availability of equipment, very high quality, high tech equipment that was not available. I started brewing in 1998, and there was equipment available and everything at that point. But now, with some of these new all-in-one systems, and ingredients are much more available, and there's newer ingredients available, like some of these Kvik yeast, for instance, opens up a whole new world for brewers, because you don't have to worry so much about temperature control. But, yeah, the equipment has evolved over the years. I mean, you can buy miniature versions of what the people use, what commercial brewers use, and you still have to be a good brewer, though. You still have to know what you're doing to make a good beer.
Okay, Dave, any final thoughts or anything else you'd like to mention?
No, thanks for having me on, Mike. Appreciate it. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, my guest has been Dave Snow, as we are here at the Central Florida Home Brewers General Membership Meeting, as we are here at Dead Lizard Brewing in Orlando, Florida. And you've been listening to the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Kara. And please stay with us for our next segment of this edition of our program today. Well, welcome back to our next segment of this edition of the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Kara here at Dead Lizard Brewing, as the Central Florida Brewers, Central Florida Home Brewers are having their general membership meeting. And with me today is Matt Hunsworth, who is now the secretary.
Yep.
And also you handle, like, education stuff, or?
Yep. Yeah, the official title is secretary. I'm on the education committee, but whatever needs to be done.
Whatever it
is. Exactly. You know how it goes here.
You do. And first of all, Matt, before we get into some other subjects, want to talk about, you
yes,
got the beer ready.
I have been on your show off and on. Well, I think I've been on as much as I possibly can since we've met, and we always talk about my beer, but I've never handed you one. So here is my latest best bitter.
Okay.
It's an English style beer. The English pale ales and malt forward beers are my favorite style. This one is going into a couple competitions this year. I was like, let me bring Mike a taste of my... I know you've tasted my beer throughout the years, but we've never tasted it on the show. So there you go. There's my latest concoction of a best bitter.
That's good. You know,
thank you. Okay.
I really like, believe it or not, I do like bitters. There's something about bitters. You know,
uh-huh.
I'm not a big... You know, a beer, I like, you know, the more sweeter beers,
yep.
But there's certain, I don't know what's in this stuff that makes it good.
That's so what's
good.
Fun about the English bitters. It's like, it's not, It's in the name, but it's part of it. It's more a well-rounded beer than a bitter beer, but there's definitely a distinct bitterness and there's a distinct sweetness. So that's why I like making these beers. So I was like, okay, I just opened this can right before you wrapped up with your last guest. I'm like, I'm not pouring any until I get Mike a sample, and then I'll let everyone else try it.
Oh, so I mean, with a beer like this, how long, you know, does it take? Is there a lot of unique ingredients to it? Or
this one's one of the more simpler ones, and that's why it can be kind of, like, difficult to get it the way you want, because it is a very quick fermenting beer. It's a very quickly aging beer, I guess the way to say it. It's not one of those beers that you're going to put on in a cellar for 5 years. You're going to want to drink it within, like, at most, I say a year, but I would say even less than that, like in 6 months, especially with a homebrew version of it. So it's a very quick turnaround. It's a very quick aging drink. So I've got enough for the next three competitions, which takes us about 4 months out. So that's about as long as I'd want to push it for a competition beer.
Okay, yeah, well, it's great, Matt. So let's talk a little bit about what you've been up to. Okay. So since it's March now, do you have a tradition of brewing a New Year's beer or something to celebrate the year?
You know, it's funny. It's really funny you bring that up, because I do. I usually do an old ale. Well, I do. I do an old ale every year, January 1st. I always have off from work. I do an old ale. And this year, I lost it. I don't mean I misplaced it. I mean, obviously, that's a very big thing to misplace. It just, the fermentation stalled. I tried to fire it up with another strain of yeast, and that just didn't take. And then after that, it started to go, it never went sour or infected, but it never got to where it wanted to be. So this is the first year in 6 years that I won't have my annual old ale this year. So I've kind of taken that as a sign to, like, just throw caution in the wind and just have fun brewing this year and not take it so seriously. Like, take it seriously that I want to make good beers, but, like, don't get hung up on the details and just have fun. And that's what I've been doing this year. And that's been a really fun approach so far.
And Dave Snow was talking about a competition where you got different ingredients, and he was mentioning or saying that these ingredients aren't necessarily tested. Like, for example, you got Malabar bars, so somebody didn't necessarily go, let's test these Malabar bars. Okay, that works. Let's see what this guy does with it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's why I think that goes back to what I was just saying. Like, throwing caution to the wind this year really worked in our favor of that, because I was like, I don't know what to do with these, so I'll put them in the mash, I'll put them in the boil, and then I'm going to put them in after fermentation. And it worked out fantastically. And it's like, if I were in that more of a mindset where everything had to, all my T's had to be crossed and all my I's dotted, we would have probably never finished the beer. So, yeah, that was a fun brew. I can't wait to do it again next year.
Oh, so I mean, have you had a lot of experience with you know, interesting ingredients? Or you yourself say, okay, what would be great, you know, in a beer? Oh, I'd like this type of beer.
Not me so much, but my wife has done that. She likes to play with unexpected ingredients. I wouldn't say unusual, because they're things you've heard of. Yeah. You just don't necessarily associate them with beer. So not me so much, but my wife has. And that's gotten me to thinking some things, too, to help her out with those. So not directly, but indirectly, I certainly have in the past year or so.
Oh, great. And we understand that Sanford's Pints and Paws is coming up. And so right now, are you working on the beer, or you have the beer ready? Or
They're brewed. They're fermenting right now.
Okay.
So, yep.
So they'll be all set. And then, so you put them, like, in a keg then? Or
Yep. I'll bring kegs of everything we made to Pints and Paws in a few weeks. Exactly.
So, I mean, with these beers, do you usually do a lot of testing, or do you make them prior to actually serving them or to the Pints and Paws Festival?
Yeah, it's half and half, actually, because I usually make two.
Right.
One is one that I know is going to be drinkable, and the other one is kind of like a something new. So it's 50-50. So, and again, so I made my Amber Ale, which I make almost for every Pints and Paws because it goes over well. And another one I made is just a kind of a pale ale bordering on an IPA with an experimental hop I've never used before. So that'll be new to me by the time it's all said and done.
Oh, Wow. So with these experimental hops, is there a certain way you pick them out? I mean, do you do certain research? Or?
I was going to say no, but I guess I do. I do read what their characteristic flavors and aromas are and decide on that. But then after that, I just do like a standard 2-ounce addition at 10 minutes, a 2-ounce addition at 1 minute, and a 2-ounce addition at dry hop, no matter what the hop is, to kind of get an idea of what it's going to taste like or smell like or both.
So, man, I wanted to ask you a question. So are you a type of guy that believes in summer beers, winter beers, I mean seasonal beers, that beers are good for the season, or are you just making everything anytime?
Okay, that's a good question because, yes, in almost any other part of the country, Florida has summer for 11 and a half months and winter for 2 weeks. So here it's a little, it's kind of skewed my perception. But I do like the idea of, I guess, seasonal releases, like you said, because that way I can't, like, I don't have the chance to overdo it and get tired of it. And I can look forward to the release of it next year. So in that respect of being a limited release or slash seasonal release, that I'm all for, because I like looking forward to something that I like and not getting tired of it.
And we had to ask Dave this. So what's your opinion on clones? I mean, or do you do them, or do you just like to do something, you know, similar to another beer?
I rarely can do a clone because it always seems to be that I can never find like one very important ingredient to it.
Yeah.
So I get as close as I can. I like the idea of clones because I like the idea of finding a beer you like and trying to match it and understanding what goes into making what you like.
Right.
So I think clones are a good learning process in that. I've just never successfully made one because I always seem to be missing one thing.
Oh. So, I mean, for you, Matt, do you, travel to different craft breweries or even here at Dead Lizard? And do you get inspired? I mean,
yep.
You try different beers?
Yep, absolutely, yes. I'm always finding some kind of idea. Actually, I have more ideas than time to brew. It's like I have an app on my phone, and a lot of people have heard of this, called Evernote, where I can just jump onto any computer and log on, and I have my same set of notes. And I'm constantly just I have like a notebook that's just called Brewing Scratch Sheet, and I just write down ideas, and there's like more ideas than I could ever do in a year, maybe even like a lifetime at this point. I'm just always finding some kind of idea. We were just at another brewery downtown last week that had a combination of, I believe it was a berry of some sort, not raspberry, might have been blackberry and marshmallow. And while I didn't I liked it, but I was like, oh, it gave me an idea to bring marshmallow into something else later. It's like, I'm constantly writing down ideas, but I just don't. It takes, as you know, it takes 2 to 4 weeks to make a beer. There's just not enough time in a year to fully realize all those ideas. But I am happy to always find some kind of new idea.
And finally, Matt, do you have any suggestions for those of us that, you know, work off a recipe but are saying, you probably mix certain ingredients together, but you have any suggestions of going, you know, just free form?
My only suggestion is just throw in something, see what happens. You're going to pick out something in there. It's going to work both ways. You're going to find something in there you might like, or you might find something in there you know never to do again. So the only way to learn exactly how to dial in the things you want to dial in beer is to make the beer. So sometimes follow a recipe to the letter. Other days, just work with what you got and see what comes out. It's that's the fun part about this hobby, is that you can, like, there's, it's like I say this, I use this comparison, I think, every time I'm on your show. It's like barbecue. When you're done, when you have bad barbecue, you still have barbecue. So it's a win-win. When you have beer that you didn't necessarily want it to be the way it was, you still have beer. So it's another win-win. So yes, just go for it.
Okay, Matt, any final thoughts or any other things you'd like to mention here?
No, I'll end with my usual ending and saying brewing beer is the greatest hobby anyone can ever do, and you owe it to yourself, if you even have a remote interest in learning how the process is done, to check it out for yourself, because it is by far the best hobby I've ever started in my life.
Okay, thanks, Matt. My guest has been Matt Hudsworth from the Central Florida Home Brewers, as we're here today at their meeting at Dead Lizard Brewing. You're listening to the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Kara, and please stay with us for our very last segment of this edition of our program today. Well, welcome back to our very last segment of this edition of the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Kara here at Dead Lizard Brewing in Orlando, Florida, as we are here at the Central Florida Home Brewers General Membership Monthly Meeting. And with me today is Ed Meesum, who is a longtime member of the club. And Ed, it's such a pleasure and honor that you could share some of your expertise. We understand that you teach brewing. You still do that? Or?
No. I got COVID retired in 2020.
Oh.
When COVID hit, all the students went away for spring break and never came back.
Oh.
What happened was the course became online, which was a lot less fun to teach brewing online and beer. But, I used to teach a seminar on quality brewing and fine beer at the University of Central Florida Rosen College. And went into online, and then they let all the adjunct professors go at the end of the semester. So I haven't taught since the spring of 2020.
Okay. So, Ed, now, are you still at Orange Blossom?
Well, that job also changed because of COVID.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, COVID really hit. COVID hit, we lost 65% of our sales overnight, literally overnight. I remember it well. It was the weekend of St. Patrick's Day 2020. We actually were making special arrangements for kegs to be delivered to certain bars for St. Patrick's Day. They never got delivered. It went to the distributor, and the state was shut down. So we lost 65% of our sales overnight, which was all on draft, so all restaurants and bars closed. We came back. We were able to get through that year, and the next year we had some PPP help from the federal government. And then I was able to get arranged for things to be set up, and I turned things back to the ownership, and I left the company in early 2021.
Okay, Ed, thanks for the update. So what are you up to now? Are you brewing? Or
Very, very little bit. I've been actually active in Seminole County politics, working for the Seminole Democrats, trying to help people get registered to vote, and filed to run for the statehouse.
Great.
Yeah, back in the day, I helped change the laws in Florida. I was able to be on the team to help change the what they used to call the bottle bill. When I first started homebrewing, beer was only allowed to be sold retail in 8, 12, and 16, and 32-ounce bottles or cans, containers. We got that changed to where now you can have everything up to 32 ounces. There's a little bit of a hole until you get to a gallon. But we got the bottle bill changed, so now you can get imported beer in metric sizes. And then later, I was also able to help out get the growler bill changed. We didn't used to be able to get growlers because they're 64 ounces, but now we can get those. And also, we helped out change with the brew pub. So brew pubs didn't used to be able to sell directly unless they were a tourist destination. That's a law that goes back to the 1960s. And I was on a team. Not in the legislature, but outside the legislature with homebrewers. I was also active and a board member of the Florida Brewers Guild. And through our efforts of lobbying and getting with legislators, we were able to change all three of those laws.
Oh, great. So, you know, if elected, then you will be that craft beer advocate.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, great. So you mentioned that, you know, you do occasionally brew, but I mean, do you still get inspired? Are you still looking for new ideas?
Well, actually more old ideas. My current brew is just a Hefeweizen. I use Munich water, and that way it comes out really nice and really drinkable. Kind of pours itself down your throat. So I enjoy that. I'm going to make a smoked version of that as well. And a dark version, Dunkelweizen.
And for our audience may not be as familiar with smoke, so how does the smoking process work?
Well, what you do is you get smoked grains.
Right.
In Sanford, the Sanford Homebrew Shop sells three different kinds of smoked grains. One is a cherry wood smoke, and that's the kind I'm going to use for that beer.
Oh, is that kind of the best, or is that the good one? Or
well, there's all different kinds. Pretty much any wood can be used for smoking grains. That's how you get one of the ways you get smoke into grain the best way, and it's the Pilsner malt, and of course it's a wheat beer, so it's about 70% wheat, 65% wheat, and the other part is the base malt, which is the Pilsner malt, and so use the smoked malt in there, and it comes out really good.
So for you, Ed, as we mentioned, you know, you've been brewing for several years. So, I mean, when you started brewing, compared to now, is there a lot of, you know, changes you've made, new equipment, new technology, or is it similar to when you first started?
Oh, no. Things have changed a huge amount. I started in 1996.
Okay.
What happened was I had gone over to Germany. I was taking business classes, graduate classes at Rollins College there in Winter Park. We went over to Dusseldorf, Germany, spent a week over there. I was enamored with their beer, the Altbier in particular. Then spent another week traveling in South Germany and Switzerland and drank all their different kinds of beer there, tasted lots and lots of different. And I came back to the United States, and I tried to find good beers, and they were very hard to find. Again, part of that was because of the bottle bill. Imported beers were just not allowed. So I stumbled into Hart's Homebrew and asked them, and they were one of the best beer venues, retailers in the Central Florida area. And they said, well, because of the bottle bill, you can't get that. And I said, what's the bottle bill? They explained it, you know, only certain sizes, which excluded metric sizes. And they told me, they said, well, yeah, but you can make beer. And the very first question right out of my mouth was, that's legal? And they explained, oh, yeah, we're a homebrew shop. We sell the equipment. So I kind of took to it to like a fish to water. And that was 1996. Is when I first started brewing. I had the kit for Christmas in 95. I started brewing, read the book cover to cover, Charlie Papazian's book on the joy of homebrewing, and joined the Central Florida Homebrewers that very first Sunday in January, and the rest is sort of history.
Oh. You know, we were talking, you know, with Matt and Dave about these contests with these, you know, these unique ingredients. I mean, is that something that you're into Malamar bars and who knows what, you know, what they say, you've got to make a beer, but you got to put this in, or?
Typically, I shoot for more traditional. I like traditional beers. I like the different styles from around the world. One of the things I've experimented a little bit with is bourbon barrel aged, and we had a good example of that one here tonight. That's one of the few things I like that's out of the ordinary, but I generally shoot for traditional, older-style European beers.
Oh, so that's kind of what you focus on, old European beers. I mean, is there still ones out there that you want to try, or, I mean, a brew?
Yeah, I would love to brew a really good Pilsner. It sounds like a simple thing. 90% of all beer in this world is a Pilsner style. The American Pilsners are an adaptation of that with adjuncts. But I've been to Germany, been to Switzerland, and had some unbelievably great Pilsners. And they're very hard to find, especially in small brew pubs. Pilsner is a lager, and lagers take longer. They take more refrigeration. You got to cool them down. They're typically not something that smaller breweries focus on. But when you taste a good one, it's excellent.
So, Ed, you know, for us that are thinking about going off recipe or creating, you know, just putting a little bit of this, little bit of that, you have any suggestions for us that are trying to go freeform?
Oh, that's the great thing about homebrewing. There's no real limit. One thing I would suggest, if you want to enter your beer in a competition, make sure you taste it beforehand.
Right.
In fact, not just you taste it. Try to have somebody that's maybe is a BJCP judge. I happen to be a nationally ranked BJCP judge, and I used to always do that. I would always set aside four bottles, typically three bottles you enter. But that fourth bottle I would taste with I would invite over a couple of people I knew that were good, had good palates and BJCP judges, and ask them their opinion. Because you brewed it. Tonight, for example, I tasted a cherry stout, and the cherries were not very pronounced. And I said, you know, this is more of a sweet stout. If you enter this in a competition, although you know you put cherries in it, it's now aged enough where the cherries are subtle, and they would be a background character and not a foreground. And judges are going to look for the cherry if you enter as a fruit beer. But if you enter as a sweet stout,
yeah,
it'll score better, and you'll be rewarded better, I think. So that's a key.
Is that an issue, Ed? Because then on the flip side, you put too much cherry, and that's, oh, get all this cherry out of here. So, I mean, you've got to learn about balancing it out,
That's the key word is balance. when you make a beer, what judges look for is a balance between hops and malt, typically. And that varies based on the style. So an IPA would be more hop balanced. A Bock beer would be more malt balanced. When you're talking about a fruit beer or spiced beer, you're looking about balance between the beer and the fruit or the spice. So a great example of one that's out of balance to the fruit side is a commercial beer called, what's it called? It's a Blueberry Blue Paw. It's by Shipyard. And it's very, you get the fruit, but it's very hard to find the beer. But if you all only taste the beer and you don't taste the fruit, then it's out of balance to the beer side. So the BJCP guidelines talk about a balance. But as a beer person, I like to taste the beer. I like to have a beer there. And then not only does it have to be balanced, the interplay has to work. We used to make a joke about a tuna lambic. Okay, you could make a tuna lambic, but why? And, you know, it could be balanced, but it still tastes terrible. So yeah. So it's not only the balance, but the interplay between those components. So if you have a light beer, you want a light fruit. If you have a light fruit, you want a light beer. In other words, watermelon's a very light fruit. You can't put watermelon in a stout. You'll never taste the watermelon. So if you're making a stout and you want to fruit it, you have to have a strong fruit, raspberry, as opposed to strawberry, something along those lines.
So you have to know, so no matter how much watermelon you put in stout, you're not going to taste it.
Correct.
So I mean, another issue is to know those things. I mean, like banana, is that something that could be prominent in beer? Or?
Oh, yeah. In fact, Hefeweizen generally has a banana character to it. There's no banana in it.
Right.
It's not allowed by the Reinheitsgebot, which is no longer the law of the land in Germany, but they still brew to it. It's the phenols that come out and the esters that come out of the brewing process with that special yeast. In fact, it's kind of interesting. They used to call it Saccharomyces dubrucki, which they thought that yeast was a separate strain. It's actually a special. It falls now thanks to modern, gene analysis. They know it's really an ale, Saccharomyces cerevisiae. But it's a special kind of ale yeast. But that ale yeast generally makes a lot of phenols and a lot of esters. And that banana ester, the particular ester to banana or one similar to it, are actually produced by that yeast. And it gives that character to that beer. As well as a little bit of clove, which is a phenol. And the banana is an ester.
Well, that's really something, Ed, because, you know, I've had beers that, you know, this is a nice citrus beer, and there's no citrus in it. It's that yeast. So, I mean, that's really neat that those flavors come from the yeast.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is pretty interesting, and you can get a lot. It's just not that you, but then, you know, you, as America, we're allowed to do whatever.
Yeah.
I made a nice mild brown ale, English mild brown ale. We had, as a guest of honor, one year for Sunshine Challenge, we had the president of the CAMRA, the Campaign for Real Ale. We flew him over from England, and I had him taste my mild brown ale that I had on a hand engine at the competition. And he noticed something that was a little different. Well, I put toasted oats in mine, and he said to me, words I'll never forget, he says, "Well, that's not traditional." And I said, "Yeah, but you're stifling innovation." And that's kind of what his job was, is to keep the status quo the same. And but that's the difference between, let's say, a traditional British brewer and an American brewer. American brewers will experiment and try different things and see what works and what doesn't work and what sells and what doesn't sell. Whereas the British and the Germans in particular are very staid. We had Michael Jackson as a guest of honor years and years ago. And I happened to have a breakfast with him and Mac Monroe. And he made a comment that was really interesting. He had been in Belgium. He was talking about a trip that he made. He was in Belgium, and he tasted their wit beer, which is a wheat ale. But it's spiced with orange peel and coriander. Then the next day, he was in Germany, and he tasted their Hefeweizen. And he asked the German brewer, he says, "Well, what makes your wheat beer different from the Belgian wheat beer?" And the German brewer said to him, "Oh, they make wheat beer in Belgium?" Yeah, he had no real idea. People didn't travel around. You know, Michael Jackson was the first to kind of start this whole idea of having styles and so forth. And then, of course, he figured out what the difference was.
Okay, and finally, and you know, one of the things I tried at one of the beer festivals, I think, was like what was that? Chocolate peanut butter stout. I mean, my question is, do you think that things like that, you know, you could use to attract younger brewers, and then say, well, if you like that, then here's maybe some more of the traditional things to make.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a traditionalist at heart, I guess, but. Yeah, anything that gets people to try it. You know, I taught that class for 14 years, 28 semesters, and every semester I always asked everybody at the beginning, what was your favorite beer? And I would say, you can't not answer. You have to say something. Right. So I would get people that would say, I don't like beer. I said, well, okay, do me two favors. One, keep an open mind because we're going to try a lot of different beers. Number two, let me know when you find one that you like. And every semester, they would find something that they liked. And these were 22-year-old students. And a lot of times it was a fruit beer, or I had one student one time liked a sour beer. Some of the flavored beers we would try, spiced beers. So, yeah, there's so many different kinds of beer out there. There's something for everybody.
Okay, Ed, we really appreciate your time. Any final thoughts or anything else you'd like to mention here?
No, that's it. I just find that the history and the tradition of beer is pretty interesting. It's, you know, beer, they've traced it back about 10,000 years ago to the agrarian revolution. And it's really the reason why we have civilization as we know it today. So it's both the answer to and the problem of all our all of our cures.
Okay, thanks, Ed. My guest is Ed Beesum. Thanks so much as we are here at the Central Florida Home Brewers General Membership Meeting at Dead Lizard. You are listening to the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Cara. And please catch us again next time.
You've been listening to the Central Florida Buzz with Mike Cara, the podcast for Central Floridians who want to be in the know what's happening in Orange, Lake, Osceola, and Seminole counties. Sponsored by the Central Florida Home Brewers, the premier craft and homebrew club. Learn to brew beer, kombucha, mead, and make wine by visiting www.cfhb.org. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you back here next week.